This is Marketing Reads, a Chinese consumer connection where we look at books related to marketing in China. Our website is ccc.qbook.tv, where you can find other audio and video episodes with photos, links, and information related to today's conversation. Subscribe to leave comments and access research episodes with applied topics and research reports. There's been a slew of books out recently, and I've got my hands on a brand new one through Interlibrary Loan. Thank God for Interlibrary Loan. Poorly Made in China, an insider's account of the tactics behind China's production game by Paul Midler. The publisher is John Wiley & Sons, Inc., and the book was published in 2009, so it includes information or references to the milk powder issues and the lead paint issues that came out in the late 2000s. However, that's not the key part of the book. Let me go over the chapters so you get an idea of this book's grounding. Chapter 1 is called Vanishing Act. Chapter 2, Trouble is My Business. Chapter 3, All We Need is Your Sample. Chapter 4, Vice President of Disadvantaged Neighborhoods. Chapter 5, I Do Now. Chapter 6, Lurid Carnival of Global Commerce. 7 is, And That's a Good Thing. 8, Grains of Toil. 9, The China Game. 10, The 7 Steps of Problem Solving. 11, Counterfeit Culture. 12, No Animal Testing. 13, Joint Venture Panacea. 14, Take the Long Way Home. 15, Lucky Diamonds. 16, Trophy Trash. 17, You Heard Me Wrong. 18, Prices Go Up. 19, You Wouldn't Want to Be There. 20, Of Course You Wouldn't Think So. 21, The New Factory. 22, Profit Zero. Ooh, that's a lot of chapters, so it must be a long book, right? No, actually it's just 240 pages, so they're really short chapters. And I think just up front, from the chapters you can see, the book is kind of caught in between two worlds, literary speaking. It's very straightforward, and I appreciate that a lot, but it tries to add a little bit of depth, but literary-wise, it's just not there. And that's a good thing, actually. It's not written by a reporter. Paul Midler is a go-between. He's the guy on the ground, and I've spoken to these kinds of people. I know a lot of these people through friends also. Very common in China for foreigners to be doing this kind of work. It's really tough work. You got to run around all the time. Basically, you're trying to get factories, exporters, lined up with importers from the West or other Asian countries, but of course the big one is the West. And some of these guys have been there a long time, but the majority of them have been there a short time. I've heard a lot of their stories, especially with the guys that have been there for a long time, and it lines up exactly with what Paul's saying. And I think it's a great on-the-ground kind of perspective for culture, for doing business in general. So if you're interested in business and China, or if you're interested in not necessarily import-export business, but just the idea of existing, negotiating, doing any kind of business with Chinese, I think this is an important read. The problem, as I say, is it doesn't run really deep. Paul comes out and just kind of tells his story, and the chapter titles give you a clue. They're just very straightforward. He tries to be a little bit cute with those titles. He tries to say a few circumstances, a few situations that are funny, but it doesn't really come off that strong. It's really just a series of events, and we get to see what things are like. The problem with that is I worry that readers will come away with a really negative picture. And that's not Paul's fault. Paul's straightforward in bringing the pictures out of what's really happening. But the positive side that he references, I mean, he's basically very integrated very enculturated, but and he acknowledges that, but it really makes me nervous somebody who reads the book is going to come away negative. To be honest, I admire Paul a lot for writing this way, straightforward, because I can't imagine readers in China not getting a bit upset by a lot of the negative points. And it's not a super negative book. It's a realistic book. It's showing you really what things are going on. Well, one thing I liked about the book is we didn't have to go through a whole history and all this kind of stuff. You know, China and the century of shame and the Cultural Revolution, blah, blah, blah. I'm getting so tired of seeing these lightweight histories in every China book. He references it a little bit, and I think it goes a little bit too far. He's always bringing up things like the Cultural Revolution, especially. And on the one hand, he does have a point. Almost any factory owner in China today, you're talking about the early to late 2000s, are going to be in a position where they're old enough to have capital and connections, government connections, money connections, that they're going to be just the prime people who suffered during the Cultural Revolution. So yeah, it plays a role. However, almost everything that comes up in the book, quality creep, the negotiation tactics, the frustrations, all of these things are just things that you can find all across China, in Taiwan, in Hong Kong, even in Singapore to a lesser extent. But these are core cultural values, I think. And that's why it's important, if you're interested in China, to look at this. Now, if you're a researcher, you're not going to get a lot of research data. But if you are doing any research, I think it's important to come look at a book like this to get a little bit of a reality check, because a lot of times in the book, Paul will mention, one of the big problems is these foreigners, you know, they parachute in, they come in, they expect things to be done their way, they're dropping off to a factory. What are some of their underlying assumptions? Well, very Western assumptions, such as a win-win negotiation. You know, I have never, ever been involved in any situation, negotiation-wise, with Chinese where it was win-win. It was always a distributive negotiation situation where the other side expected to win at any cost. And if I was to win, that would be a loss to them. Even though to me it seems like we could have a win-win, that's not the way most Chinese negotiate. That's not to say every individual isn't that way, but as a generalization, I think it will serve you well to hold that generalization. So he's got these foreigners, they drop in, and I see this all the time. They see what they want to see. They're sensitized to Western things, so they see a McDonald's, so they think everybody's going to McDonald's. This is completely untrue. They go to factories. Up front, these Chinese negotiators, these factory owners are smart. They know what these foreigners are looking for. They know how to say the words that get them hyped up. They know how to get the prices at the beginning low, and then you get tied up into a relationship that basically you can't get out of. One thing in the book that comes across strong, which is, you know, as a business professor, a person involved in business, I think this is a tough one, is Paul kind of sounds a little frustrated that it seems like nobody in the supply chain, all the way from the factory, which he can see clearly, you know, a lot of these factories, they're just throwing products together, they have no idea what's going on, but all the way to the retailer, nobody has any idea what's in the product, what the product's made of, how the product functions, what its quality is, whether it's really useful or not. That's a little bit disheartening, but I think we all know that. It's kind of, you know, it's a buyer beware situation, caveat emptor, and that's the way it is. And I think in the West, especially in America, we've kind of fooled ourselves into thinking, you know, there were businesses were all highly involved, and it's kind of the buying into the propaganda. You know, when you watch that Johnson & Johnson commercial and they tell you how they care and all of that, do you really believe there's someone in the company who cares? I mean, I don't know. I don't find those people very often. You know, our American car companies would not be in so much trouble maybe if the board of directors actually drove instead of were driven by chauffeurs everywhere or flew. So, yeah, I'm not, you know, I think it's common, and Paul's experience in China brings it out, and he really, you know, shows that. That's a little bit of a shock. I mean, you know it, but it comes across in the book shocking in a way, and I think he's frustrated with it. You know, nobody knows what's going on. So not just that, but the know-how about the product, the know-how about the market, about the consumers, the know-how about almost everything seems to be in short supply. Now, he has an example of a diamond distributor who wants to try to sell diamonds. And he seems to think that anyone can pick this trade up in a week. Just go to training for a week and you can do it. And he's not really interested in hearing what Paul has to say about, you know, how to do business in China, which is a great example. I'm glad he brought that up, because the luxury market is a very tough market. I mean, I was out just the other day looking to buy a house. I mean, looking to buy a house. We're talking $500,000 minimum U.S. dollars to get a little concrete shell. And these very expensive investments, you go shopping around, you can see, you walk in, you see what people are doing in there. Well, there's no furniture, there's tatami mats thrown down on floors, sheets and blankets for people to sleep on. And these are people who are loaded living in living in this huge investment. Chinese are notorious for saving money at every small margin, all the marginal costs completely cut down, even though they're sitting on top of, you know, piles of money. Of course, from an American perspective, this is why I have this big expensive house. Of course, in China it's not big and expensive, but in America it'd be expensive, maybe a loft in New York. You might as well make it up good, right? Get a big screen TV, get everything nice, get it done, furniture, China set, and cups and forks and knives and all that. I've rarely been to a Chinese family's house that has a matching dish set, right? We have rice bowls and chopsticks from here and there, and I've also been to people who are extreme, people's homes who are extremely rich, and they have wooden, you know, disposable chopsticks to get washed and reused. And this is not southern China I'm talking about, this is Taiwan. So what I see here are some cultural threads that go through here. And this diamond seller drops in, and Paul had kind of a bit of a laugh, but I think he used the case because it's an exemplar, you know, kind of a standard behavior. He thought he was going to just do business his way, the American way, which was in America. They threw these diamonds, lower quality diamonds, through big discounters and had picked up business, and he'll do that in China. No, don't work at all. Didn't work, and that was, you can read the book to find out what happened in that case. So I think that the book really picked up for me towards the end. I mean, at the beginning he kind of introduces it, but then later he really sets up what's happening in these factories, what's happening in the price and the negotiation. That's where the book really got interesting and became kind of a page-turner for me. For example, I like towards the end of the book, in the chapter called Prices Go Up, where the example is basically the exporter, the manufacturer in China, has the importer in America on a hook. They are dependent to get their orders, and now the factory will start upping prices here and there, decreasing quality, etc. And his point, Paul's point in the book is, you know, why is this happening? Why are these factory managers not looking towards a long-term relationship? Why is everything just for this right now, trying to make a profit? And this is where I'm afraid people read the book and go away negative. But Paul doesn't see it that way. I think he understands that this, he's enculturated enough to understand this is another winning strategy. This is just another way. And on page 190, he says it. He says, for example, and this is pretty typical of his writing in the book, claiming that factories' methods were wrong would have been a mistake. The game could be won just as well as King Chemical, and indeed China itself was proving, by advancing down the field just a few yards at a time. So this short time horizon, everything is, you know, being done in the 1 year, 2 year, 3 year horizon, and everybody's, what would we would normally think of, you know, just grabbing and fighting for every little thing, and sometimes really silly things, just cutting a few cents here and there, switching some ingredients here and there for no apparent benefit, for very small money, arguing endlessly over something that just costs $30, $40, or $100. It just seems meaningless that you would do that when you want to keep a long-term relationship, but that's a Western concept. And the Western concept, you know, is wrapped up in this assumption that it's correct, it's modern, everyone is heading towards this direction. And these foreigners come in and they don't see that there is another modernity there, and that's the Chinese modernity, very different. That's where Paul falls down a little bit. I think he's also very critical. He actually says in some places, you know, why is this so backwards? Why is, for this culture's great advancements, why is it so backwards in other ways? And I think my point is, you have to just take the whole thing. This is the way it is, and it's not going to change. And it does have advantages, and he does observe those. For example, on page 193, he talks about the competitive advantage. You know, he went out to try to switch suppliers for the main story centers on a chemical company and an American importer who are importing things like soaps and shampoos. And they get in a really bad situation, so the American importer tries to find another manufacturer, and Paul goes out, and within just a few days, word gets back to the original manufacturer. Why? Because they're related to each other, they're a friend, a cousin of a cousin, or a sister of a cousin, or something like this. This seems like collusion, but this is a core advantage of Chinese factories. This is why Chinese factories work so well. Only in a Chinese cultural situation, it doesn't have to be in China. It can be anywhere where there are Chinese and they are basically following Chinese norms, values. Taiwan, Hong Kong, even in America, we have Chinese together. They need something done, they just call people in. They call family members in. They call up family members to get other workers to come on over cheap and fast. The flexibility is all there. And for Americans, it would never work. Even if your brother-in-law called you up and said, look, I need you to come in and work this weekend, 24 hours over this weekend to get this job done, who would do that and who would call? Chinese would do it. It's very, very normal. So I think Paul's really got this ability to see it clearly, and he describes it well in the book. My concern is, for the Western ears, it's going to sound very negative, and I think Paul plays that up a little bit. And it is, after all, called Poorly Made in China. So that kind of shows where it is. On page 209, Paul does a great one. I love it. He comes right out and says, my favorite word, my area of study, Zhenao. He's talking about how everyone thinks that China's so huge. We don't know exactly how big the population is, but of course foreigners come into Chinese cities and they see how crowded they are. And he says, you know, this is, he infers, he doesn't say it clearly, but it's not necessarily because it's so crowded, it's because Chinese just love that zhonao. They all love to be together and feel comfortable with that and that zhonao feeling. And that's a core value, and he picks up on it very well. He does talk a little bit towards the end of the book that, you know, he gets a bit of philosophy in here, a little bit of political correctness maybe, and I didn't really get into that too much. But, you know, he's saying there's a lot of gray market here. Not that much. Well, let's say somewhere around half maybe of this stuff being produced is going to their first tier importers in the U.S., but then a huge amount is going to other markets where the prices are actually being sold at higher levels, and he does have some good observations on that. We all know about that. Also, a lot of things are going out the back door of these factories, and I have a great example. I mean, not that long ago, I was looking at some Star Wars figures in Singapore, and I went to a hobby shop, and I'm not a Star Wars nut, but a little bit of a fan, and I wanted to get a specific figure. Specifically, I wanted to get Boba Fett. And I couldn't get Boba Fett. I couldn't find him in all the figures they had. And I asked the guy if he could find it or if he could tell me when it came in. Yeah, blah, blah, blah. Never get word back. Meanwhile, I just check it out on Tudou, a website in China where there's lots of individuals and companies can put their website, put their products online. Easy to find, easy to buy. And I found the greatest Star Wars figures. And they were just amazingly good, better than anything I could find being sold at the high-end hobby shops, and the prices were around half to one-third the prices at the retailer in Singapore. Where were these coming from? You could find them online. I mean, total articulation, all the details, all the extras, things I can't find in any stores. Of course, they're coming from the factories that are producing them for their American importers, and these things must cost a mint back in the U.S., and here I am getting them for a really great deal. So I've got a little Star Wars collection. I didn't just buy one, called up my son, and he got a few. I got quite a collection. So for the price of one in Singapore, I can get a few out of China. So yeah, there you go. That's what it's all about. Great book on one hand for researchers. It's an eye-opener. If you're an academic, I advise you read it. And don't walk away. Please don't walk away from this book with that negative view, saying, well, they're screwed up, they've got to improve, they'll get better, they're doing things wrong. Just take it for what it is, and this is the reality. This is another modernity, another winning strategy. And you're going to get your lunch eaten if you don't wake up to that. This is not a backwards, quote-unquote, place, but this is the reality. And I think Paul's experience is specific in his business area, but in my own experience, which is integrated, you know, going through working inside companies, not working as a go-between, but actually inside organizations, working my way up over 20 and more years, I see the exact same behaviors at every kind of negotiation stage. These strategies are totally normal. He even mentions once when confronting what I think they called her big sister, the factory owner of King Chemical in the book, and she immediately attacks back. Oh no, that was a hotel. He has a great story about a situation in a hotel and a toilet being broken. Right, that was a great story. And when he tells the front desk the toilet's broken, and they say they fixed it, and he confronts them and say, you know, it's not really fixed, and they attack back. They say, well, you know, out of all the rooms in this hotel, isn't it funny yours is broken? This is totally Chinese negotiation tactics. I've called this all these years, the nuclear option. Very common, especially with female, what we would call dragon ladies, which is a very common business character among Chinese. And I call it the nuclear option because it means that as soon as there's any issue, they just go right all the way to the maximum, blaming you or accusing you or asking for you to pay something or some kind of remuneration, just maximum attack. The whole thing, staying out of courts and the inability to have the kind of formalized systems that we think of in the West, all of these things, very common in my experience. So again, don't walk away from this book with a negative feeling. Take it for what it is. And I admire Paul for writing it. I hope he doesn't get too much trouble in China for it. Enjoy. This is Marketing Reads, a Chinese consumer connection where we look at books related to marketing in China. Our website is ccc.qbook.tv, where you can find other audio and video episodes with photos, links, and information related to today's conversation. Subscribe to leave comments and access research episodes with applied topics and research reports.